sempre dei film che basti durante il suono, mi chiamano, non si sono studiati, ora vanno dicendo, io vi sono uscito in vari posti, cioè, dici, cioè, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading text Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 88, Lord Shiva say from Vrikasura. We're reading 27 to the end of the chapter to text 40. So since we have about 14 verses, I'm going to just read through the English until the end, and then we'll chant the last verse together. So starting with 27. The Supreme Lord, who relieves his devotees' distress, had seen from afar that Lord Shiva was in danger. Thus, by his mystic Yogamaya potency, he assumed the form of a brahmachari student with the appropriate belt, deerskin, rod, and prayer beads, and he came before Vrikasura. The Lord's effulgence glowed brilliantly like fire. Holding kusha grass in his hand, he humbly greeted the demon. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes the disguised Lord Narayan as saying, "For us seers of the absolute truth, all created beings are worthy of respect. And since you are the son of Shakuni, a wise man and performer of great austerities, you certainly deserve the respectful greeting of a young brahmachari like myself." 29. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear son of Shakuni, you appear tired. Why have you come such a great distance? Please rest for a minute. After all, it is one's body that fulfills one's desires." Purport. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada comments, "Before the demon could argue that he had no time to take rest, the Lord began to inform him about the importance of the body, and the demon was convinced. Any man, especially a demon, takes his body to be very important." 30. "O Mighty One, please tell us what you intend to do, if we are qualified to hear it. Usually one accomplishes his purposes by taking help from others." Purport. "Even an envious demon will not refuse the help of a Brahmin's potency to gain his ends." 31. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Thus questioned by the Personality of Godhead in language that poured down upon him like sweet nectar, Vrika felt relieved of his fatigue. He described to the Lord everything he had done. The Supreme Lord said, 'If this is the case, we cannot believe what Shiva says. Shiva is the same lord of the Pretas and Pishachas whom Daksha cursed to become like carnivorous hobgoblins. O best of the demon, if you have any faith in him because he is the spiritual master of the universe, then without delay, put your hand on your head and see what happens. If the words of Lord Shambhu prove untrue in any way, O best of the demon, then kill the liar so he may never lie again." Report. Lord Shiva may have the power to revive himself even after having been killed, but at least he will be dissuaded from lying again. 35. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus bewildered by the Personality of Godhead's enchanting, artful words, foolish Vrika, without realizing what he was doing, placed his hand on his head. Instantly his head shattered as if struck by a lightning bolt, and the demon fell down dead. From the sky were heard cries of victory, obeisances, and well done. Well done." The celestial sages, Pitas and Gandharvas, rained down flowers to celebrate the killing of sinful Vrikasura. Now Lord Shiva was out of danger. The Supreme Person, okay, this 38, 39, this will be the main verse we'll talk about, and then we're going to do 40 together because that's the sort of benediction at the end of the chapter. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then addressed Lord Girish, who was now out of danger. "Just see, O Mahadev, my lord, how this wicked man has been killed by his own sinful reactions. Indeed, what living being can hope for good fortune if he offends exalted saints? What to speak of offending the Lord and spiritual master of the universe?" Report by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, this statement of Lord Vishnu implies a mild scolding. My dear possessor of unlimited vision, O you of clear intelligence, benedictions should not be given to wicked demons in this way. You could have been killed, but you were only concerned about saving this poor soul, so you disregarded what would happen to you as a result. Thus Acharya Vishvanath Chakravarti points out, Lord Narayan's mild rebuke also highlighted Lord Shiva's exceptional compassion. And we'll do text 40 responsively. Ya evam avyakrita shakyudandata. Rashisakshat paramatmano hare. Gurucha moksham katayech trinoteva. Vimuchite sangstribi statarbi. Ya evam avyakrita shakyadandata. Parashya sakshat paramatmano hare. Garitra moksham katayech trinotiva. Vimuchite sangstribi statarbi. Yevam avyakrita shaktyadanvata. Parashya sakshad paramatmano hare. Garitra moksham katayech trinotiva. Vimuchite sangstribi statarbi. Ladies. Ya, whoever, evam, thus, avyakrita, inconceivable, shakti, of energies, vidanvata, of the ocean, parashya, the supreme, sakshat, personally manifest, parama atmana, of the super soul. Hare, Lord Hari. Giritra, of Lord Shiva. Moksham, the saving. Katayet, recites. Shrinoti, hears. Va, or Vimuchite, is freed. Sangstribi, from repeated births and deaths. Tata, as well as. Adibi, from enemies. Translation purport. by the disciples of His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Lord Hari is directly Lord Hari is the directly manifest absolute truth, the supreme soul, and the unlimited ocean of inconceivable energies. Anyone who recites or hears this pastime of the saving Lord Shiva will be freed from all enemies in repetition of birth and death. So as often in the conclusion of many of the pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam, the final verse of the chapter, will give us some benediction and tell us more or less what we gain or will receive from the hearing of these pastimes of Bhagavatam. Report. Srila Sridhar Swami concludes this chapter with the following statement. Bhakta Sankhatam Alokya Kripa Purna Hridham Bhuja Hiritram Chichavakya Tu Mokshayam Asha Keshava. When Lord Keshava saw the danger confronting his devotee, his lotus-like heart became filled with sympathy. Thus he delivered Lord Shiva from the consequences of his own eloquent words. Thus ends the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 88th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Shiva Saved from Vrikasura. Om Gyanatam Randa Shagana Jana Savakaya Chaksarun Mitam Yana Tasma Shri Gurvena Mahavancha Kopa Tugascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitano Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhavanamo Namaha. So we hear the conclusion of this story of Lord Shiva and Vrikasura and how Lord Narayan Krishna comes to save him, taking the form of a Brahmin boy and tricks Vrikasura into touching his own head. And of course, then the benediction that he's has been given by Lord Shiva is turned against him, and the demon is killed. Another one of these very wonderful, interesting, exciting pastimes of Krishna that we hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And as usual, not only do we have these stories that have a certain interest, value in themselves, that they're very kind of exciting and many things are happening, but they also teach us many lessons. And in these last two verses, we hear some wonderful instruction. First, while Lord Krishna is giving some mild chastisement or rebuking Lord Shiva a little bit, like this wasn't a very good benediction to give. You know, telling someone that they can, you know, touch anybody's head and kill them, have their head explode, probably not what you'd want to do in the future. But at the same time, he was recognizing Lord Shiva's compassion on his devotee. And of course, we know Lord Shiva is very compassionate, and we see that he's even compassionate to demons who please him. Also, wasn't Banasura with his thousand hands? I think he was benedicted by Lord Shiva, and I think wasn't Ravana the worshiper of Lord Shiva? So, in many different situations and cases, and we can see even those who are not of the most noble character receive benediction from Lord Shiva because he has that sort of kindness towards all living entities. And he's very easily pleased. Prabhupada explains this in the purport Bhagavatam 465. It says, Lord Shiva is called Ashutosh. Ashu means very soon, and Tosha means to become satisfied. So very, very easily satisfied. The demigods are advised to go to Lord Shiva and beg his pardon because he's very easily pleased. So we see that the great devotees of the Lord, such as Lord Shiva, are very compassionate towards their followers, devotees, and to all of the entities. And then in this final verse, we hear particularly in the prayers by Sridhar Swami, the compassion of Lord Krishna to his devotee. Sridhar Swami says, Kripa Purna Hridham Bhuja, but his heart became filled with sympathy. So we see that both Krishna and his devotees are very compassionate and merciful. And this compassion and mercy is manifest to the devotees and to the non-devotees, to all living entities, to all conditioned souls in this material world. So first we see that Krishna is very compassionate to his devotees, just like he gave protection to Lord Shiva, because Shiva is considered to be the greatest devotee of Krishna. It's described that this quality of compassion towards devotees is very, very inherent, very strong within Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita says, Samoham sarvabhuteshu nanadiveshu steena priya na bhajante tu mam bhaktya mayiteteshu chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Srila Prabhupada explains this in the purport. He says, one may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone, and no one is his special friend, then why does he take a special interest in the devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental service? But this is not discrimination, it is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity in whatever form is his son, so he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. He's just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on a rock or land or water. But for his devotees, he gives specific attention. So Krishna is very merciful to his devotees, but is also described as merciful to everyone. And Prabhupada gives this example of the rainfall. The rainfall sometimes falls on fertile soil and helps the crops to grow, but it also falls on the ocean and falls on the rocks, where it does very little good. But still, the mercy of the rain is there for anyone who is able to receive it. In the same way, Krishna's mercy is given out freely to everyone in this material world. All conditioned souls are able to receive that mercy. Krishna exhibits three different features in his pastimes, in his Aishwarya pastimes, Audhurya pastimes, and Madhurya pastimes. And of course, the Aishwarya pastimes are his ones of great majesty, of splendor, of Aishwarya refers to the controller, the supreme, such as Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. And his Madhurya pastimes are very, very sweet, such as his pastimes in Vrindavan that the devotees can particularly relish. But his Audhurya pastimes are those of Krishna's most merciful, magnanimous nature. And those pastimes are most strongly manifested in the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exemplifies this merciful aspect of Krishna. Of course, we know that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came as Krishna in the mood of Radharani, who is the most merciful to all living entities. So we have his prayer, Mo Mahavanaya Krishna Prema Pridayate, that he is the most merciful. Because why? Krishna Prema Pridayate, he has given love of Godhead freely. So this is the unique feature of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and why he is so merciful. Because he has given the highest platform of bhakti, he has given Krishna Prema, pure love of God, but he has given it very simply. And has given the Yuga Dharma, the Sankirtan Jagya, which is the most easy process of self-realization. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement to deliver the Jivas and his Kali Yuga. And of course, the primary activity of the Sankirtan movement is the chanting of the holy name. So by this chanting, one is able to actually experience Krishna. One can experience Krishna because Krishna is non-different than his name. They are one and the same. They are non-different. All aspects of Krishna are equal to him. His name, his form, his activities, his paraphernalia, his pastimes, everything is equal, his words. So in this transcendental realm, one can actually realize Krishna by any contact with Krishna. So as one chants the holy name, we had actually a very nice reading. I'm sort of following up a little bit. This wasn't planned, but a little bit on John Masami's reading today about the importance of the holy name and the importance of the mercy and compassion of the devotees in delivering the holy name. When one chants the holy name, one becomes purified. One's heart becomes cleansed of all the anartas, of the impurities, of all the material contaminations there for lifetime after lifetime, uncounted lifetimes in this material world, we've been collecting these anartas, collecting these impurities. And the holy name alone, practically, is the most powerful method of cleansing the heart of all of these impurities. And as one becomes purified, one's heart softens and one begins to experience a taste, experience some of the bliss of our original relationship with Krishna. Original love of God, which is there within the heart, which we have forgotten, being in this material world for so long, a little glimmer arises. And of course, through the mercy of the Guru, through the mercy of the spiritual master and the mercy of Krishna, this seed of devotional service is planted, the creeper begins to grow, and one's devotional service continues on. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not only gave us a taste of Krishna, the taste of the holy name, but he also engages us in his pastimes of spreading the holy name and saving the conditioned souls. So, of course, as we know, he asked us all. First of all, he said, you know, anyone who has taken their birth in the land of Bharatvarsha must make it their life's goal to spread the holy name and to save the world, to give Krishna consciousness to everyone. The Prabhupada explains in that purport, this doesn't mean just those born in India. This applies to everyone. And then Prabhupada goes on and said that in talking about his Western disciples and how they have also taken up this mission and how he's actually so pleased that people all over the world are taking up this mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and helping to spread the chanting of the holy name to every town and village. So our mission as followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and followers of Srila Prabhupada, who has exemplified this process of spreading Krishna consciousness, is to follow in their footsteps and bring the chanting of the holy name to every town and village. I was thinking, and I can't remember exactly what in the reading today, but there was something that there was one part that referred to this about the idea that one has to become enlivened oneself first in Krishna consciousness, then one can give Krishna consciousness to others. And Prabhupada used to tell the devotees, he wanted us to often come to India to visit the holy places of pilgrimage. He said, so our Krishna consciousness could become revived and we could become enlivened and then go back to preach. In other words, Prabhupada didn't ask us to come to India and stay. Well, of course, some devotees are needed to preach in India. But he asked us to come to India, to come to Vrindavan, to Mayapur, become enlivened in Krishna consciousness so we could return to our preaching field in the West or wherever it might be. So in the same way I was thinking about, we have these wonderful opportunities of chanting the holy names, such as Kirtan Melas, and they give us an opportunity to relish the holy name, to get very deeply into the holy name, to experience Krishna through chanting. And then the idea is, as we become enlivened, and as we begin to experience the holy name, a natural desire arises to give that to others. So through hearing and chanting, we become enlivened to give hearing and chanting to others. So that's the process that Srila Prabhupada gave us. First become Krishna conscious ourselves, and then give that Krishna consciousness to others. So we're able to do that when we develop some of these qualities that we're reading about in these verses today that Lord Shiva possessed of compassion to his devotees and to all living entities. Because without this quality of compassion or mercy, we don't have a lot of impetus to preach. We don't have a lot of impetus or eagerness to give Krishna consciousness to others. We might be satisfied, as we heard as Prahlad Maharaj said, that some are satisfied to simply remain solitary bhajan. But Prahlad Maharaj said, I am not content to do this because I experience the suffering of others and I want to relieve that suffering of others and not be content just for personal salvation. So this is the mood of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. In Bhagavad Gita 16.2, talking about the different divine qualities, one of them is daya uteshu. One is merciful to all living entities. This is the quality of the devotee, that he has this sense of mercy and compassion. I want to talk about that just for a minute. Sometimes we define compassion as like pity or sympathy or empathy. And empathy is defined as the identification with or vicarious experience of the feelings, thoughts, or attitudes of another. But spiritual compassion is deeper than that. It's deeper than the idea of empathy. Because another definition I found, I think, which is more of a religious definition of compassion, is a deep awareness of the suffering of another coupled with the wish to relieve it. So isn't that the compassion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas exhibited? Experiencing the suffering of others, feeling for that, and then doing something to relieve that suffering. That's the deepest compassion. who actually want to do something to help that person, and not in a superficial way or a materialistic way, or, you know, oh, I feel so sorry for you, but actually to give somebody something that will help them eternally, give them actual spiritual benefit. So a Vaishnava is described, this is reading from Srila Prabhupada's purport, 4.647. A Vaishnava is described as Paradukaduki, because although he is never distressed in any condition of life, he is distressed to see others in a distressed condition. So we may not experience, we may experience some distress, but a devotee, even a devotee who is very, very pure and does not experience personal distress because he has no identification with a gross or subtle body, with the mind and all of their problems that the mind gives us, even if one has transcended that, one may still experience distress because of the distress of others. So kind of recapping here, there's two parts to this idea of compassion. First is to understand the suffering of others. Now that may seem simple or obvious, but I don't think it is so much. I think that to be able to actually see outside oneself is an advanced state of consciousness that hopefully we're developing as we become advanced in Krishna consciousness. We see that in the material world, many people, if not most people, have an inability to see others outside of the reference of one's own self. Prabhupada has told us many times, this idea of I, me, and mine. We see ourselves and we see the extensions of ourselves as being primary, and we're not so concerned with others. So to actually understand the feelings of others and to understand others' conditions takes a little bit of development. Either a person naturally may have this as a very compassionate person, or develops it through spiritual practice and develops that quality. Now, to be somewhat self-centered is the normal state in conditioned life, basically. But of course, many in the extreme state, it becomes a personality disorder. We say like narcissistic personality disorders or antisocial personality disorders. There are people who are so centered upon themselves that they actually can't experience empathy for others. They really can't experience, you know, how anything affects, you know, anything that doesn't affect me personally is of no value, no concern. You know, and this is the opposite of the Vaishnava. You know, the Vaishnava understands the suffering feelings of others, and then after understanding, has this desire to relieve others of their suffering. So I'll just read it once more. We heard it this morning. Prahlada Maharaj said, I am not at all afraid of material existence. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. Of course, this is the exalted position of a great devotee like Prahlada Maharaj. Just last Friday on Lord Nrisingadev's appearance day, we spoke quite a bit about Prahlada Maharaj's qualities and his teachings. I was thinking many of us may feel that, well, I don't really feel this way very often. Do we really feel paradukaduki? We're only experiencing our only unhappiness is the unhappiness of others. Very advanced stage. So often we see that there are these obstacles to feeling compassion. So I was thinking about how do we develop compassion? And these are just some thoughts that I had on this. First of all, it's through knowledge, through hearing. We have to hear the instructions of Krishna and the Guru of Srila Prabhupada so that we fully understand what our situation is. Without understanding one is not the body, one can't develop compassion because one becomes very concerned with the body and the bodily extensions and other people's bodies, and one is not able to really understand the spiritual essence and how to give that to others. And then there must be practice of bhakti, of our sadhana, of hearing and chanting. The process of hearing and chanting helps us to become purified, helps us to become detached, and helps us to more fully understand the need for Krishna consciousness. When one has an understanding and one naturally wants to give Krishna consciousness to others, one may try to preach or give Krishna consciousness, or now we call it usually outreach. Somehow preaching has become a bad word. I don't know why. Prabhupada used it all the time. But anyway, as we do our outreach or our preaching, you know, something happens to us, doesn't it? We actually become more compassionate and we become more realized in the philosophy by giving the philosophy to others. I mean, this is a fact that Prabhupada told us in the very beginning, and we've all seen that it's true. When we give Krishna consciousness, even if we're not always successful, just in our attempting to glorify Krishna and give Krishna to others, that, you know, there's that feeling in the heart, that compassion develops. And that it's actually, there's an ecstasy, there's a certain bliss, as we say, about giving Krishna consciousness, preaching to other people, giving to non-devotees, even distributing prasadam or chanting on the streets or any way that we can give Krishna. Gives great satisfaction because the soul has been satisfied. We also have to develop our conviction. If we don't have strong faith, we're not going to have the faith to go out and approach others, be rejected by others, maybe criticized by others. There has to be some conviction, there has to be some faith, and it needs to become strong. And one with strong faith can undergo difficulties, take some trouble, because one is convinced that Krishna consciousness is the real answer to the suffering of life. We may try to help people in so many ways, and a compassionate devotee wants to help people, relieve them of their distress, relieve them of whatever difficulties they have. But we know behind that, we know that the real relief of distress comes through Krishna consciousness. It comes from people understanding their relationship with God, developing their relationship of service, and then beginning to experience their love for Krishna. And that's the real relief of distress. And we have to have that faith. We have to have conviction that this is the actual process. This is what is going to relieve the suffering of mankind throughout the world. I mean, sometimes I think we try to do so many other things and so many other practices, you know, but ultimately it's the hearing and chanting of chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service, worshiping the deity. These basic practices are what are going to give satisfaction and happiness, what are going to purify the heart and bring people to Krishna consciousness. So we have to have that conviction, we have to have our devotional practices, and as we advance, we become free of material desires. And that freedom from material desires leads to the heart becoming soft as our love for Krishna develops. So when we are feeling when the heart softens and we're feeling some compassion, it's actually the compassion of Krishna. It's the compassion of Krishna and the Guru, and it's reflecting a little bit through us. As we open ourselves and purify ourselves, then we develop more and more of the qualities of Krishna. And this quality of compassion that Krishna has and the spiritual master has may be manifested a little bit through us as we make advancement. And so one thing that I've just experienced in working with devotees is one of the things that prevents our compassion to others is when we become too absorbed in our own problems and our own issues. Right? You know, if we're concentrating so much on my issues, my problems, what's wrong, then it's very hard to have compassion to others. So we may be experiencing those things. Those things are real, and we may have to deal with them. And we may need to get consultation with others, speak to senior devotees about whatever those problems. Certainly we need to deal with them. But the idea is to deal with those issues in such a way that we can free ourselves of those obstacles, those anartas, and have compassion for others. And sometimes that's just a matter of doing it. Prabhupada said, you know, and Prabhupada has asked, well, what if you don't feel love for Krishna? What if you don't feel these things? You do them. It's the process of bhakti. It's absolute. It works. If we simply continue the process of bhakti, the process of sadhana, these things will develop within the heart. Of course, one should also consciously work at them as well. That's, you know, in other words, don't make Krishna do all the work. You know, we need to reciprocate a little bit and help Krishna along the way in purifying us. In other words, take the lessons that Krishna gives us. You know, don't ignore them, and don't just, in other words, continue on our sort of materialistic way and think, oh, it doesn't matter, somehow Krishna will. No. So have faith in Krishna. Krishna will help us, but also we need to do our part and show Krishna our sincerity by hearing and chanting the holy name. Okay, I should stop at that point. Are there any comments or thoughts? Yes, Sean.
I like what you said, that we have a role to play. because I hear more and more that all we have to do is our sadhana, and one day a light will go on. But at the same time, we have the offenses to the holy name, such as holding a mean attitude towards others, devotees, etc. Maintaining material attachments. These are things that we're told to work on, as you said, which is very different from waiting for the light to go on by chanting Hare Krishna. So some people have asked you the problem, but how do I love? And he says, by loving. I was speaking with Sarn Govinda because he's so eloquent and so such a master of shastra. I said, where is this verse? Because Srila Prabhupada sometimes speaks in very ordinary English instead of quoting verses, that a man tends to see others in terms of how he views himself. And that means until we feel love and at peace with ourselves, we can't love anybody else. Yes. And you said that when we're food preoccupied. Therefore, we have to learn how to love. And that's not something that we have to wait for. That it's a choice. I have to understand that love is what I am because I'm spirit and the rest is Maya. We say I'm not this mind. We say it very glibly. But to know that to say I'm not this mind is to declare that everything except love is not what I am. And we have to do this, and if we don't, we can do our sadhana for 100 years. And if we don't come to this point of understanding that this is my responsibility and it's not going to change.
Thank you very much. I really liked your point about taking personal responsibility. Interestingly, you mentioned talking about the offenses, which will actually prevent us from spiritual advancement. And the two that you mentioned are the two that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentioned in his purports in the sixth canto in the story of Ajamil, that most of the offenses will go away automatically through repeated chanting of the holy name, but he mentions these two that will cause us suffering. One is offenses to the devotees, Vaishnava Aparad, and the other is committing sinful activity on the strength of the Lord or having those material attachments. So it's confirmed that those things are very, very important, and if we neglect them, then there may be some suffering along the way. Krishna will purify us eventually, it's true. That reminds me, I'll tell a quick story about I've said this before, but when Narada Narayan tells on one of the memory tapes, when he was with Prabhupada in his room and Prabhupada's chanting up and down, and he finally says, Narada Narayan, in his very dramatic way, he says, Srila Prabhupada, is it possible that someday I may actually become purified through chanting the holy name? Prabhupada keeps chanting, and Lana goes, yes. And chants some more, and he walks back and forth. The Prabhupada finally turns and says, but it may take a very long time. So it can take a long time or a shorter time, depending upon how much we apply the process. Okay, other comments? Jen Lester?
I'm just repeating what Sukadeva was saying yesterday in the reflection period at the Shesha Prabhu's class. And Shesha was extracting kind of the three essential principles of Lord Chaitanya's mission. Namaruchi, Vaishnava Seva, and Jiva Doya. And then what Sukadeva said was that when I'm in difficulty, if I just try to do those three things, then automatically the difficulty seems to dissipate. There's something inside of itself. To help people. We know that from the years of book distribution, you go out on book distribution, if you're not feeling good at the end of the day, or at the beginning of the day, you feel great at the end of the day. All the reciprocation is just good.
Thank you. Yes. Anything on the other side of the room? Jeremy, up there?
I was just wondering, from hearing this pastime of Lord Shiva, it's a little confusing. It seems like Lord Shiva just quickly gives the whatever the person wants without any consideration. And it seems like that would encourage people to do that more and more because they know that whatever they want, they'll get it. Whereas Krishna is a little more thoughtful and not necessarily give you something that's bad for you. So it seems like it's a bad thing just to give people what they want.
Well, Krishna actually slightly chastised Arjiva at the end there. He says, yes, yeah, maybe this isn't such a good idea. You'd be careful about giving these kind of benedictions that are going to turn out to be harmful. In fact, it's, where is it? I think it's in Majjhalila, the 22nd chapter, where Lord Chaitanya says, you know, that verse where he says, you know, that I'm not so unintelligent that I would give my devotees something that will hamper their spiritual advancement. I don't know that one by heart, but Lord Chaitanya says it very clearly that, yes, Krishna has that mood that he's very careful in what he gives his devotees because he is always giving us those things which are going to help us surrender and help us advance in Krishna consciousness. And those may or may not be the things that we think we want. Is it 22?
But seeing these fools asking for poison, since I am intelligent, why should I give him poison?
Yeah.
So I'll give devotional service to my lotus feet and be possessed.
Right. So Krishna is actually saying, even if you're asking for something material, he may not give it to you. He may give you something else, you know, for your spiritual advancement. So yeah, there is a difference. There is a difference in the benedictions of Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna. And that's actually explained earlier in this, in the last chapter. You know, in text in 88, you know, the question, oh, was that this chapter? I guess the same chapter. The question of, you know, why Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna's devotees are different. And, you know, so yeah, it's a distinction. You know, Lord Shiva's devotees tend to be materialistic. And Lord Krishna's, hopefully, we tend to not be so materialistic and more interested in pure devotional service, at least is our goal. Anybody else? Okay, maybe we probably should finish up here quickly, maybe.
Just thinking about that question, why Lord Shiva would give, but that's the whole Karmakanda section of the Vedas. It's to encourage people who are materially attached that at least they should fall in line with following proper and recognizing higher authority. They may still be materially attached, but they're recognizing something higher than themselves. And that's a progressive step forward. And they'll become purified in the process and gradually move on to upasana as opposed to material fulfilling. So it's a progressive stage. It's like grade school compared to.
That's a good explanation. Yeah. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.